So we're ready for another edition of You Ought to Know, and you're calling in from a safe place out there in the world.
I am. You're not the only one experiencing some technical difficulties this morning.
Oh. So,
we're choosing to call in this morning, so that way we can keep to our schedule.
Okay. When you say technical difficulties, would these happen by any chance to involve a vehicle, or is it something else?
Something completely different, fortunately. The car's fine and dandy this morning.
Okay. Well, I wanted to mention, and you may have heard, that in downtown Palmer on late morning, just before noon, there was a fire at a Jensky Auto Repair, right in downtown Palmer. Fortunately, it seems to have been confined to a shed that had been added on to the building, sitting between the repair facility and the Eagle Hotel. But the fire department was able to respond very quickly. They put the fire out, and I noticed that there doesn't appear to be any further damage from that. But what it brought up to me was, and I have no idea, we haven't had reports yet of what it was that was in the shed that was burning, but certainly there were photos, videos of a fire and smoke in that area. And it could, I'm guessing, be almost anything. But it brought to mind that particularly when we have facilities that handle a lot of other materials that are flammable, whether you're car repair or a painting place or whatever, that it requires extra attention to make sure that everything is okay. Any comments?
Oh, absolutely. Anytime that you have, even if it's just your own home, and you store lots of paint and paint strippers or just any type of gardening or even basic home automotive care type supplies, you always want to make sure that everything is kept, anyway away from any open heat source. Everything is disposed of properly. That's just something that you don't really want to mess around with. And so it is extremely important, especially when you're on a commercial scale, my shop is, that you make sure everything is taken care of and once again, like I said, disposed of properly. I mean, there's a lot of attention to detail that comes into being able to properly store chemicals, handle flammable materials. I mean, I think that's pretty much something that most people are aware of. I know that one thing that did kind of catch me off guard, and I learned this obviously years ago. But when it first came to my attention, that the rags that technicians will use for, wiping off parts, they're very frequently oil-soaked rags, that even they have to be stored properly after they've been used and before the laundry company comes to pick them up, because there have been quite a few documented cases of those rags spontaneously combusting when improperly stored in the shop area waiting for the laundry service to come and pick them up. So, I mean, there's the obvious stuff of, making sure that can of brake clean isn't sitting close to an open flame. But then there's a lot of other things such as, making sure you're storing your used rags properly so they don't spontaneously combust.
Right. And I, too, some years ago, was warned and have been very careful at using any kinds of rags that I have been cleaning something with, so that you have some solvents or other things on them, even cleaning paintbrushes and so on, that they're stored properly, put away properly, and are not going to vaporize in a fashion that makes it easy for an explosion or a fire to begin.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, enough with that. Topics that you have thought of this morning, Toby?
Well, I read something very interesting this morning. Well, we'll kind of do the serious part first.
Okay.
And then if we have some time, we'll go on to the more, because I was thinking over the weekend, it was just a beautiful weekend. It was so clear and warm. It started making me think about spring, but we'll talk about something else first.
Okay.
I was over the weekend, I was reading how England just passed their first piece of legislation requiring people who have self-driving vehicles to carry two different forms of insurance.
Oh.
Because I know this is something that you and I talked about as far with, you know, autonomous vehicles. You know, how can you tell the difference, or how do you distribute responsibility for accidents occur when the person is driving as opposed to when the vehicle is driving? And that's what this piece of legislation is seeking to separate, and it requires people who have self-driving vehicles to carry two different forms of insurance. One is for the person, and one is for when the vehicle is driving.
Okay.
So that way, in the event of an accident, if something were to occur when the vehicle was driving, then that would be covered underneath a separate piece of insurance.
Well, that's very interesting, because as we were talking, I realized that here, when we break away from what might be the stereotype of the driver-vehicle connection, which is you buy a vehicle, you have it insured, and you drive it. You have a little bit of concern when you have other people drive your vehicle, and generally that's been taken care of okay. And then you have the relationship when you rent a vehicle and drive it, and whether you are covered under your own insurance or you buy additional insurance to take care of things. But now we make it even more complicated. And the step toward the self-driving car, of course, is whether you have something like Uber or Lyft, where you climb into a car that you've made an arrangement with. It's not a taxi, which has its own insurance type of thing, but what happens in the case of an accident when you're being Ubered from one place to another? So you've got all of these just very interesting variations on the theme of who gets to be responsible when you are driving or your hands are off the car and you're not driving it.
Absolutely. And that was something that, because I'm sure everybody's by now has heard of the incident in which over on the East Coast, there was an incident with a man being sued, or actually he ended up dying. But he was involved in a accident on the freeway because his crash avoidance system had failed to go off on his Tesla. And as a result, he ended up merging into another person at highway speed. So, you know, it's you come into that, you know, at that particular situation, who's really at fault? You know, is it the person's driving fault for relying upon a system that failed, or is it the fault of the manufacturer for having a system that failed, and as a result, an accident did occur? So that's what this legislation is seeking to kind of divvy out as far as responsibility for when accidents do occur. And I do find it interesting that, that they, first of all, they can define what qualifies as a self-driving vehicle, but they also did go on record as stating that they do believe that autonomous vehicles will be, you know, the future of the automotive world, and that will ultimately make driving safer. And I know that we've had this topic of discussion, too. I mean, you do have both ends of the spectrum. Will it make it safer, or should we still, you know, rely upon the person or the self for learning how to drive and taking on the responsibility of driving a 2-ton piece of metal around on a highway? So,
just to add a little bit more to the story, you mentioned the Tesla crash, and just a few weeks ago, there was a 8 months after that fatal crash happened. Federal auto safety regulators said their investigation of the car and found no defects in the system that caused the accident. And it was kind of an interesting thing because it basically pointed out that the present driver assistance system in the Tesla is could only be relied upon to react in some situations that arise on roadways. And so basically, this is a work in progress, and apparently whatever guidelines were in place, it was found that this autopilot did a pretty good job, but when you're crossing traffic, it's beyond the capabilities of the system. And so the autopilot apparently still requires the driver to be engaged. You can't just take a nap when you're doing that.
Right, and that's I think, honestly, that's the way I think it should be. I mean, we are nowhere close, even though we do have, I mean, autonomous vehicles are becoming increasingly more common. States are starting to kind of feel that they're starting to you know, introduce new forms of legislation. I mean, they're starting to come on board with the whole autonomous vehicle concept. But, you know, the technology is nowhere near as such to where when the driver is present in the vehicle, they can just simply stop driving.
Exactly.
You still have to be aware.
Yeah, and that's probably the point, that even at high-end vehicle, where after hearing that this is self-driving vehicles are coming, you may think, well, we're there, but that's not quite the case, at least in terms of what's available out there right now. But that's kind of an interesting thing. So what basically we're going to be looking toward is a transition time, and that's going to be the fascinating experience as whatever vehicle that finally arrives at your door without a driver to pick you up has been certified to be hands-free, and in fact, in some descriptions, will not even allow you to interfere.
Right, and I think that, you know, as far as the introduction of autonomous vehicles into mainstream society, I mean, I really honestly believe that, changes to insurance is going to be one of the key factors in being able to do it and to do it safely and to make sure that people still understand that just because your vehicle can drive itself or maybe even has just a form of crash avoidance, you know, ultimately, you know, you as the driver still need to be responsible for that piece of machinery once you step behind the wheel, because it is a very large responsibility to drive, and it's not one to be taken lightly just because people can get hurt so easily.
Yeah, so basically the summary of all of this is that no one should believe that there are fully automated vehicles on the market yet. Sometimes you can be misled. You have a term like autopilot being used, but it doesn't really mean it's autopilot. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And then I also attached that same article, which is, I found it interesting that, you know, two of the main points that, you know, you and I talk about quite frequently on the show, as well as stuff that I just kind of think about in my own downtime, is they were also introducing plans for increasing the infrastructure for the support of electric vehicles across Great Britain.
Right.
So that way they, you know, I think they mentioned they had somewhere around 11,000 charging stations, but even then it still was not enough to fully support, an entire country that is driving mainly electric vehicles. So once again, you know, it comes down to the debate of, you know, where do we see the future of automotive engines going? Are we sticking with the internal combustion engine? And if we do, are we heading towards the likes of a hybrid, or is it going to be a gasoline engine or a diesel, or are we strictly going with, you know, electric vehicles? Because you know, it really comes down to what can the infrastructure support. That's going to be the popular, what dictates the popular choice. And so I did find it interesting that Great Britain is making pledges to increase the infrastructure for electric vehicles.
Right. Well, that leaves the question up this year. We are heading into spring. Spring is one of the times there seem to be, my observation is that people may see spring, they may think about getting a new vehicle, And of course, there are a lot of new vehicles, all kinds of models on the market. And there's a very interesting decision point you bring up in part by talking about hybrids. There are increasingly hybrids that are available, even all-wheel drive hybrids, that improve gas mileage, but are not capable of running any distance on electric alone. And then there's this other category called plug-in hybrids, and they're increasingly available. There are plug-in hybrid all-wheel drive vehicles or plug-in hybrids that allow you to go varying distances, in some cases 50 miles, if you count the Volt and others, which when you look at a driving pattern, if I can drive 50 miles electric only, but I still have a gas engine on board for longer trips, and I live in Palmer and I do a lot of driving around the valley, I can do most of my driving, except for the longer trip to Anchorage or whatever, purely on electric. And some people have found that works to their advantage, where there are stories of people that may have a plug-in hybrid, but really they may put gas in their vehicle once a year or twice a year when they actually do any longer distance driving. And so it all comes down, it seems, to being aware of your own pattern of driving.
Absolutely. I think that's the qualifier for right now. As we see technology increase, because car manufacturers are going to, you know, it's going to be dictated by two things. First of all, obviously, consumer demand. But consumer demand is going to be dictated by finances. You know, what's the most, you know, cost-effective option for a lot of people? And plus, like you just pointed out, depending upon their driving habits or their driving demands, you know, because up here in Alaska, you know, I mean, our driving demand for driving is a lot higher than it is down in the lower 48 states. I mean, public transportation is available, but not quite on the same level as you see in a lot of other states. So plus our towns and our cities are much further apart. We have a lot of commuters that will commute from the valley and into Anchorage. And so, you know, the option of just being able to walk to work is not a very practical one to rely upon in the state of Alaska. So, you know, and so it comes down to, great, you know, what is the price of gas? You know, how much money can I afford each month for gas? But then it also comes down to it's a convenience thing, too. I mean, if you had, like we talked about, an electric vehicle, but, you know, the car was only capable of going 50 miles at a time purely on electricity, on the electric motor, then, you know, as long as your driving habits could sustain that, then it would make sense for you. But if it couldn't, then that vehicle might not be a good choice until either technology improves, which it will, as far as distances that can be driven on one charge, or the infrastructure, whether or not it's there to support that, as far as the availability of fast charging stations.
Right, right. Very, very, I think it's a turbulent time, because what appears to be happening each year is more and more variations on the theme, making the decision maybe even more complex as you play out all those factors that you've been talking about. Yeah. So do you have another topic you want to throw at us here?
Well, like I said, over the weekend, you know, I was looking outside and I was getting all excited. I was trying really hard not to get too excited, because, I mean, I know we're not even into March yet. I mean, we're a couple days away from March, but we're still not quite there. So I was trying not to get spring fever too bad over the weekend. But really, it was a gorgeous weekend to go outside and to be outside, and it was sunny and it was warm, and it was just a really beautiful weekend. And so, of course, you know, owning a shop, that's where my brain went first, is I started thinking about tire season.
Ah, right.
Put a little bit of a damper on my good mood, but but yeah, I started thinking about tire season and how, you know, people are going to start bringing in their tires. We're just going to start getting calls for tires here soon. And we need to start kind of getting ramped up for that, as far as the spring tire season.
Right.
So, you know, want to talk again. I mean, now would be a really great time to maybe kind of locate your spring tires, your summer tires, make sure that you can find all four readily accessible and that they're in good shape. Maybe take one out of the bag, inspect it, and then check the tire tread depth. In fact, actually, pull all four of them out and check them all just in case maybe you had an alignment issue that you weren't aware of when you took them off in the last fall.
Right. And if you were, just a reminder for people who have tires that they've taken off, the question sometimes comes up, how to store tires? Should be in a warm place, a cold place, standing up on their sides, what?
If at all possible, store them inside and lying down on their side.
Ah, okay.
That way you don't end up with flat spots on the tire. But, you know, the other thing that you want to make sure, I mean, if you have them outside and you, over the last couple months, they've collected some water inside, obviously it's going to be frozen, you know, at least a couple of days before you plan on getting your tires changed over, bring them in somewhere warm so that way that the water and ice and snow that's accumulated on them can be melted off. Makes it a lot easier for the technician when he's changing over your tires if there isn't a bunch of water and ice and snow collected on there.
Okay.
Can really kind of bugger up the changeover process.
Sure, sure. Yeah, that we have them out of the weather. I like to keep them dry, certainly, but they are outside in an outside unheated shed, and it seems to work each year, but because very often there's not room enough to put those tires in a interior warm place. But good suggestion, because it comes up faster than we believe. Even though it seems to be cold, and next week is going to be very, very cold, then there's a move towards spring. And as I remember, the date, particularly if you have studded snow tires, is somewhere around May 15th, is it, that you have to have them off?
Yes.
Okay. So we still have a little ways. We still have a little ways.
Yeah, that's still have good. A little ways. And, of course, everybody, well, most people know of the penny trick. You know, if you're unsure as to whether or not those summer tires are still good, just pull out a good old-fashioned penny, turn it upside down with Abe Lincoln's head facing you. And if you can see all of Abe Lincoln's head, that means that your tire tread depth is below 2/32, which means that tire needs to be replaced.
Okay. All right. And we don't have any inspections of vehicles these days, do we? That I know at one point Anchorage did, IM inspections, et cetera. But in the state of Alaska or even the city of Anchorage, there's no requirement for a vehicle inspection prior to it being on the road. Is that correct?
That is correct. There are a lot of states out there that do require a safety inspection, which is different than an IM inspection. An IM inspection is for emissions, but a safety inspection actually inspects the entire vehicle and makes sure that it's safe before it is allowed out on the road. So, you know, if you have any major issues with the vehicle, if your tires are unsafe, if your brakes are unsafe, those are all issues that will cause the vehicle to fail, and you will have to fix those problems before that vehicle is allowed out on the road. And as you pointed out, Mike, the state of Alaska does not have either one, a requirement for either one of those inspections.
Well, that's interesting. So if, however, someone is going down the road and happens to be stopped because they have, lights out or something of that sort, they can be cited for at least the obvious problems, typically involving lights. But you're basically saying that someone can drive down the road with a vehicle that has bad brakes, bad tires, and out of alignment, and there's nothing that's done to reveal that, short of having the vehicle crash, I guess.
That is correct, yes. You can be pulled over and cited for things like as you pointed out, lights that are out, cracks across the windshield that would be deemed as far as inhibiting the driver's ability to drive the vehicle, excessive tint on the windows. Those are things that you can be pulled over and cited for. But things like bad tires, bad brakes, you know, a lot of the other more obvious issues relating to safety to that person who's driving as well as other people on the road, those things are left up to driver responsibility.
It puts a lot on individual responsibility, not only for yourself, but other people who might be on the road that would suffer if your vehicle fails in motion.
That is absolutely certain. And that's, you know, because I can attest, I mean, that not everybody is responsible with their car care. I mean, pretty much any shop that you go to, as long as they're a good, reputable shop, they're going to do some form of an inspection on your vehicle prior to working on it. How involved that inspection process is kind of depends upon the shop. But usually, you know, they're going to catch things like, brakes that are unsafe, tires that are unsafe, if for nothing else to protect themselves against any sort of claims.
Sure.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that everybody takes their vehicle in to be serviced regularly either. You know, there are a lot of people that maybe do their own oil changes or perhaps don't even do any oil changes at all. So, you know, that begs the question of is how often is that vehicle actually being inspected for safety-related issues? And a lot of people would be surprised to know that, you know, some safety issues you don't necessarily get a lot of warning with. I mean, they don't all start out as noises and sensations. I mean, some issues can be there and present, but not necessarily noticeable until it's too late.
Whoa. That's just a reminder, again, individual responsibility, but we're all in this together when you're going down the road. And people have different levels of comfort with the kinds of repairs that might be indicated, whether it's a certain amount of brake left or repairs that or tires, pushing tires to a certain level. Sometimes, as you pointed out, there's a metric, a way to say, yeah, these are not going to be good, particularly if the weather turns bad or get a little bit of snow or ice, et cetera, transition from a dry road. Well, okay, I think we've covered a lot of ground there, Toby. Any last comments before we finish up?
Just, you know, as spring approaches, consider taking your car in, getting it oil changed, get it inspected. If you have any questions, as always, my shop, Edmonds Import Auto, over by the fairgrounds and next to the Noisy Goose, we're always here for you. We're always more than happy to answer any questions you might have. Any concerns that you might have, feel free to stop on in, or like I said, get ahead of the spring car care season and get a jump start on your oil change and pull those tires out and start, you know, looking at them. But in the meantime, though, enjoy this beautiful weather that we're having before it gets a little bit too cold again.
All righty. Well, thank you, Toby. We'll be back again next week with another edition of You Ought to Know. Have a good day.
Sounds good. You too, Mike. Bye-bye.